A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Here is part two of our interview with Steve Archibald, the lovely, wonderful Steve Archibald. Get ready, prepare yourself even for some amazing insight into those 4 years as a player with Barca. How Terry Venables imported Liverpool's defensive system to win La Liga. What it's like to score and win in a season-opening Clásico. A look inside the incredible talent and unpredictable mind of Bernd Schuster. The world's worst massage. Hi, Mum. And how to avoid one of the most notorious hitmen in the history of European football. Steve's in the process of writing his long-awaited autobiography. It will be superb. By the end of this interview, you should know how much that is going to be worth waiting for. Here at the big interview and on Twitter, we'll keep you posted about Steve's project. Finally, this is the last podcast of 2016. Like all the top European pros, we're off on a winter training camp. Back on January 12th with another compilation show from the first season of The Big Interview. The main man about whom everybody will be talking is one Alexander Chapman Ferguson. Fergie. For now, enjoy the Spanish adventures of one of his former players, the man that around here they call Steve Archigoles. Take it away, Stevie. I think I'm hearing intertwined themes in that, you know, the way you play, it impresses Terry Venables when you're at Aberdeen, he's at Crystal Palace, you play Terry's team in the cup final, you win. It maybe wasn't an automatic or a natural that you should then decide, I need this man, this footballer, this character, as I try and establish myself at Football Club Barcelona. But I suppose I asked the same question, did you have any doubts about moving from Spurs to Barcelona? And what were the criteria you used to say, yes, I'm good enough for this. I'm going to try this. I'm going to take this risk or accept this challenge.
It's never like that. Not in my brain, it was never like that. I didn't want to go to Barcelona. I didn't never ever want to leave Spurs. But Irving Scholar had come in then.
Yes.
And he wanted the money. And, you know, back at that time, you didn't have any real power.
Yeah.
If you were gone, you were gone. Either it was just to Barcelona or somewhere else, you were gone. It's a question of time. Or you didn't go and you rotted in the reserves. Yeah, they could never have done that with me because my level at that time was, nobody would have accepted that, but still, their life would have been difficult. So Irving wanted the money. He was coming in, he's a youngish guy that thought he could rule the world, and he had no idea how a football club ran, really. Anyway, I got a call from somebody, said that Terry wanted to meet me, and so I went to meet him in a hotel, and he discussed it. He said, I want you to come. He said, I want you to come because you're... And he discussed mentality. He said, you're strong enough mentality for this. I know it. You score goals. You're tough. You're quick. And that's what I need. I want you to come. But I didn't want to go. And I wanted to stay at Spurs. But there was nobody at Spurs saying, stay. Nobody was saying, yeah, here's a new contract. Well, that's typical Irving at that time. Irving Scholar at that time. So the deal was on. I went to Barcelona. We sat down, we're talking, and they had Hugo Sanchez upstairs, of course, and because the club wanted him. But Terry said, no, I want him. So it went on for hours, and I thought, fuck this. I said, listen, it looks like they don't want me. I'm going. Yeah, I've had enough. Terry said, no, you'll see. You were saying, just give me half an hour. So we, I waited and waited, and then the president walked in, Jose Luis Nunez, and you know, come in like a coat over the shoulders and stuff, and I'd been primed by somebody else what to say to him if he came and spoke to me. So he comes in, and Juan Gaspar, my very good friend, said, Steve, come and meet Mr. President, Mr. Nunez. And the president said to me, because after these hours of talks and talks, and I was gone, I was ready, I was walking. And he said, Steve, do you want to sign for Barcelona? And the person at Prime, he said, if he asks you any question, just look in his eye and answer him. So I looked him straight in the eye. He said, do you want to? He looked at me straight in the eye. He said, do you want to sign for Barcelona? I said, yes. He said, okay. With that, he turned, and the deal was done in seconds.
Gosh.
And that was the end of it. And then it was too late for me to walk when I was there.
What a strange carry-on. The coach they've hired has such a clear idea of the footballer and the person that he wants, yet there's hours and hours of dilly-dallying, irrespective of whether Hugo Sanchez is a good footballer or not.
It's a power struggle between the club and Terry.
Yeah.
And you're never stronger as a manager on your first day. So Terry had to win. If he'd have lost that, he'd have had nothing.
So you've got, there's no internet, there's no Sky television out there. Have you got a very clear perception of what kind of squad you're joining and what kind of football they play?
I had no idea. Yeah. Never heard of anybody in the team. Mm. Never been to Spain on holiday. Never wanted to go to Spain on holiday. Mm. And never come into my brain in any way, shape or form.
Gee whiz.
Any way, shape or form. Nothing. And all of a sudden I was there, yeah.
When you walk into the camp now, what effect does that have on you? Does it impress you as a stadium? When you see that you've signed, and you see this place you're going to play for the first time, empty or full?
After I'd signed.
Is it inspirational? Is it interesting? Because it's one hell of a place.
Well, after I'd signed, they just took me away to a hotel. I didn't see a stadium. Mm. So I never saw it till next day, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, it's big.
That's a better way to say it. Okay.
And that was all. But the key thing for everything is the pitch is the same size. Okay, it might be 2 yards or 3 yards.
I understand.
Same pitch, the same 11 players here and 11 players here, and everything else is the same. So it's all tucked away. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. The crowd's not going to bother you because they're your crowd anyway. Nobody's going to kill you. It's just a question of 11 against 11. And again, back to the same question, as you get in training ground the first day, mm-hmm. and you look at yourself and you look at them, you think, am I good enough for this?
Measure yourself.
Can I handle this? Mm-hmm. And they're looking at you as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just you, it's looking, they're looking. And I could, and everybody was happy.
What stands out in training when you begin to train those first few days? Is it, I don't know, is it Schuster's touch? Is it, does Miguel give you one as a hello? Or what does stand out?
Nothing, just the boxes. When we train in boxes, because they're fanatical, you know, 5-2, which was a big pleasure for players to play in that, and that's where they judge you, because you know, balls flying around that, and if you've not got a touch, it's
Mickey Hatter's made your camp now career, because Nobody's testing you more than you and Mickey, picking the ball that your first touch is like glue.
No, my first touch was great. There's no problem the first touch. And you never get to be at the very top of anything if your touch is not good. But anyway, it was good. It was good, and there was good. There was nobody in the 5-2 that was better than mine. So nobody. So that's how you judge, and that's how they judge you. And then they get comfortable, and they give you the ball, and then they play with you, and then you get a little bit closer, and then little by little, that's how it works.
The first game goes quite well. The first competitive game goes quite well. In these days, these modern days, you've on and off, you've lived in Barcelona since. And you never get a Clásico in the first
game. Because
it's too marketing, and the computer seems to always coincidentally spew out, I don't know, about November, December, March, April. Yeah. Game one.
Yeah.
Away at Madrid.
Yeah.
What's the experience like?
Well, it's... I remember it funnily enough, because when it came out, it was gloom and doom. Players were saying, oh, Madrid away, first game. And then Terry turned it on its head in the press more than anything else. He said, oh, what a fantastic first fixture we've got. And he built it up that way, and that changed everybody's brain. Just simple as that. And then everybody thought, oh yeah, Madrid away, first game, brilliant. And all of a sudden, the dressing room, the doom and gloom had gone. So the psychology in that was of the utmost importance.
Do you remember the people around you? Because you said, you made the point, that Barcelona had a really poor league history. I can't remember the date, but it had been years since they won the title. Athletic Bilbao could win it, Real Sociedad could win it. Were the players nervous? Did some of the players carry a special, we have to win this or we have to not be humiliated because we're in the Lions then, it's Madrid. It's a very special rivalry.
Well, it was a worry, yeah, of course it was, because the first game away to Madrid. But because of the work Terry had done in training, and he showed them a system of playing which was fantastic, defensive system of playing, and everybody was convinced within 2 weeks of the system playing because we'd done it in pre-season. We beat Boca 9-1, I think, or 9-2, and it was the record, I think it still is the record, and it may still be the record in the Gamper tournament.
Yeah.
And I scored two goals, and the way it was organised at the back is, the players still talk about it now and still use it, and it's a fantastic...
What, did he go to a three with wing-backs?
No. I'm not going to tempt you to go through the whole thing, but basically nobody gets down the line. You're all pushed inside, so you're coming out to that defender, then if he gets past him, he's coming out to that defender. Before you know it, you're away with the ball and it's gone. Nobody gets down the line. And it was developed from a Liverpool way of playing.
It's his best friend in football in those days, probably still now, is George Graham, and it's something that George believes passionately in as well. Always show them inside.
Yeah, but the actual detail that he went into was crucial for the players to convince the players, because the players didn't know who he was, right, coming in.
Fair point, well made.
He's turning the world upside down defensively speaking. He gives freedom in attacking sense, gives options, but then gives freedom. But defensively, he went into intimate detail.
When you begin to live in Barcelona after that first game, do you notice around you socially or in your neighbourhood or in your treatment in a hotel or a restaurant that you've scored in a Clásico? Are you a hero figure?
Yeah, of course. You go and beat Madrid 3-0 away from home in the first game of the season, and then everybody's happy, of course. It's same situation. And the city's happy, people are happy, city's happy, you're happy, club's happy, everybody's happy. And you're the focus of attention because you're the one that did it.
See, when I moved out here, you were really quick to help me. I remember we had dinner one night, went out, and it's still the case that people were just, everywhere we went, became archi-goalers because you scored so many goals. They adored you. I don't know if it was simply about an appreciation of quality or the goals. My opinion is that they saw something in how you played, the pressure you carried, your competitive streak that they particularly liked.
I think everybody loves a tryer, right? And if you want to pitch and try your best, and on top of that, if you're talented in some way and they can see a talented person trying as well and really putting 110% and not just, you know, when the occasion is there to use his talent, but he's actually a worker as well. And combined with that, and you're scoring goals and you're getting winning things, it's just a combination of things that they really appreciate. But the key is, of course, is to win.
Is the story true that as you arrive, Maradona's left and his jersey's going a-begging? That's a true story, that Schuster doesn't want it and you do, because of the number and the burden of responsibility?
No, I didn't want it. Not because it was his, because I just wanted my own number 8.
Okay.
But that was Bernd's number, and I had it in my contract, so I could have taken it. And I said to Terry, you know, there was a situation there where it comes up to the game, Bernd sits down beside number 8, and I said, Terry, you know, he said, do you want me to tell him? I said, no, I'll tell him. So I went and spoke to Bernd, and I said, Bernd, you know, number 8's my number. Luckily, Bernd spoke English, a bit of English. He said, no, Steve, number 8's my number. I said, yeah, I know, but I said, it's in my contract, it's my number, and it's really important to me. I got a big spiel about how important the number 8 is for me. He said, all right. He said, and then he wanted a bigger spiel how important it was for him. And then this went on for some time, and I walked away again, and Terry said, well, I said, well, no. I said, I'll tell him. I said, no, because I could see this is a point in time.
Yeah.
Where it's going to be make or break for everything. I said, no, I'll tell him. I'll go and sort it out. So I'm back. I said, Bernd, I'm going to tell you this. I said, I've got this in my contract. I could take the jumper right now. It caused, you know, a problem. I've told you everything. I've just told you about how important number 8 is for me. And that's for scoring goals and everything else. But you've explained to me what you've explained to me. And I understand that. I said, that's fine. You have the number 8 and I'll take number 10. He said, Steve, thanks. And it was a genuine thank you. because he didn't want the stigma. He said, I'm not wearing that number 10. He was adamant he wasn't wearing it. And so that moment, that was a moment of make a break for my career in the club, because if I would have taken the eight, I would have never seen a pass. That's for sure.
Yeah.
That's guaranteed. Yeah. It might have been an explosion in the dressing room. He might have walked out. Anything if it was a bit volatile. Lovely guy, and he's a good friend of mine, still is.
Yeah.
And we played fantastic football together, and he was my main man in midfield that fed me. And it's like I've seen it to midfield players. I knew everything he was going to do. As soon as he lifted his head, I was gone, and he hit me every single time. It was fantastic.
But again,
that comes from that moment.
That judgment, you read the situation and the repercussions.
Yeah.
And you didn't, you lost a battle to win the war, or you gave a battle away to win the war.
Yeah.
Because there was a bigger prize.
Bigger picture.
People
yeah.
won't remember Schuster other than what they've seen him doing, managing Madrid recently, Getafe, whatever it might be, wherever else.
Yeah.
Just like you did with Mickey Hazard, help a little bit, because my memory of Schuster was that he was extraordinarily talented, very mobile, quite a good athlete, but used the ball brilliantly.
Bent was an athlete. People don't realise he was a big, strong German guy, blonde, a typical German you would imagine, right? Big legs, big guy, and he'd run. You know, we'd do, there were certain running sessions that in training to really puff you out a little bit, where you'd start in the byline, you'd run to 6 yard back, 18 back, halfway line back, other 18 back, other 6 back, other touch line and back.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're going full speed, bam, like a screw, boom, boom, boom. He's fantastic engine in him. On top of all of that, his ability was fabulous. And when I got here, it was after his injury. He'd been crucified almost by Goycochea in the tackle. That was a concern for him. It was never really fully recovered from that. So I can imagine, and I'd seen him because he came to this club when he was 19.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that, 19-year-old
playing
this club. Yeah. And I'd seen him playing in European Championships, I think it was, with Germany at 19 or whatever age he was.
Which I think they win.
I can't remember.
Think they win and he retires aged,
yeah,
I don't know, 22. There was a scandal at the time.
But he was fantastic. He could hit me left foot, right foot, any foot. He was his pinpoint accuracy. People have asked me, and I never answered the question, and I never will, who's the best midfield player?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's midfield players that midfield players, but the best midfield player for me as a striker, you know, there's two or three, but you know, Bernd's in there and
he's in the mix.
Pinpoint and any distance as well, because Ben had big legs and he could really pass a ball from any distance. You know, you could pick it up in the edge of the 18-yard box, I'd be over the halfway line and away, and then he'd be a 60-yard ball right up the line, I'm onto it and we're out anywhere. And short as well, and strikes and penalties.
Tells a story that he plays for Barcelona, Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid. That really tells a story about quality, about people saying that's a winning man, that's a player that people come and watch, because these are all part of the mix. If you're a club, I think you think, who sells the tickets, who lifts the trophies?
He's a complicated chap.
I've met him, and I don't know anything like you, but I've met him and it's sunshine or storm, it seems to me he's quite volatile. He can go off depending on mood. And he also had it was strange. I met her. His wife is his agent, and she was very forceful.
Yeah,
was my experience.
Well, she was a strong influence in his life, which is fine, and that's, it's up to Bernd and his family to run the life the way they want. I never criticise it or comment on it. It's his life, and he can do it. If he's happy, that's fine. Good. And he'd come in the morning, and I would say good morning. He'd say good morning. Fine. That's it. End of story. I've got no criticism towards Bernd at all. Contrary, I can only praise him for the ability he had and the way he used it and the way he helped me on the pitch and the passes he gave me and the goals we scored and the trophy we won and the friendship he showed me in the dressing room.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's great to be able to come away from any career and be able to say that too. I also like the generosity. It's not often said in football. I often lament that when you see friendships in football that have been enduring and rich over years, they're often not spoken about. They're too little written about or explained.
But this is not a friendship. It's because we never went for a meal anywhere. This is a camaraderie, I suppose, that I understood him maybe a little bit more than the rest did, because I had a Nordic mentality, same as his, and I can understand what he's thinking, and maybe some complexes in there, and I thought, fine, okay. He's okay with me, I'm okay with him. We're playing great football on the pitch, we're scoring goals, we're winning, end of story.
You threw in a name there.
It's a respect thing.
The Butcher of Bilbao. and Donnie Gokicha. Presumably you had to play against him too. Yeah. Who, you know, he did Maradona.
Did Maradona, did Bernd, and I was next in line. Yeah, it was just a natural progression.
How did that clash go?
Well, you know, in sometimes in situations like that, you think, you know, it's building up, the whole thing's building up, the game's coming up, you're in Bilbao, and Bilbao is an intimidating atmosphere. Back then, you can imagine.
Because it wasn't like Parkhead, anything could happen.
Anything could have happened, yeah. And you know that the guy you're playing against has done the two foreigners that have been there before
you.
Yeah. And you know, and there have been mumblings in the press and everything else. So you've got to take a viewpoint, maybe a little bit differently. And, you know, you talked about intimidation. I was never intimidated, but I thought, there's no way he's going to catch me in this game. No chance. He's got no chance. So I played to the side of him, not in front of him. Always played to the side of him, so he could never catch me. And that was it. I just thought, I'll get through this game, I'll get through it. He's not going to catch me, he's not going to croak me, and then we'll go on, we'll move on. That's it, end of story.
I love game management. I love defender management. It's a great concept.
In a situation like that, you've got to... It's stupid trying to be brave. You're going to go and play in front of somebody that is half, almost half to your predecessor, not your predecessor, Maradona and Bernd, who are still playing, and nearly finished their careers. Mm-hmm. You've got to take a view on it, right?
Yes.
You get through it. Don't play in front of them. Play beside them. See them at all times. And that's it.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I didn't really know about this until we went out at that time in Barcelona, and people were kind of the goal with the ear is a fantastic goal in a difficult stadium to do something extraordinary in the old European Cup, which was like just the holy grail, maybe even more than the Champions League is now. The situation is Juventus against Barcelona in the European Cup, and I think you've won 1-0 here in a really difficult game. Maybe even Julio Alberto scoring. I'm not...
Julio scored, yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. And it's a very, very good Juventus side, isn't it?
It's a top Juventus side. You've got Platini,
yeah,
Michael Laudrup, Boniek, mm-hmm, all in that squad. Gentile. It's all the top Italians. It's Phil Monte.
And
you're in there. It's cold, cold night. Solid ground. The fans, the flares. You're talking about intimidation.
The old Comunale, which is right on top. It's a...
If you're going to be intimidated, that's the place you're going to get it.
And that's not a joke. It's true. And you're 1-0 down. You know, there wasn't blanket coverage of it all. Most people listening to this won't understand the geometrically, like, an impossible thing you did to score. Tell me. It's coming from... I think the ball's... You're up. My mentality says that when we've talked about it before, you knew that it was a vital thing to get a goal, to calm the crowd, to change the dynamic of the game. What happens? The ball comes over from the left and take up the
tail. Well, funnily enough, it came from... Yeah, we're attacking the goal, and from our left-hand side it comes in. And ironically, it came from Victor, not from Schuster, who'd be a... You know, you think, well, a ball like that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a brilliant ball, to be
Victor
fair.
Victor Sanchez, St Mirren legend.
No, Victor Muñoz.
Victor Muñoz, yeah. St Mirren legend, sorry.
Who's, you know, had captained Spain for 80 times as well, and et cetera, et cetera. And Victor had given me a goal in the previous round as well from Oporto. Another pass from Victor straight through. This one's coming against Juventus. And the Oporto goal got us through because we were under cosh a little bit. And so did this. So Victor fires one in at the back post, but it's too far.
Yeah.
You know, it's not Bernd, it's Victor. So he's done a great job. He's got it in. And it's coming right across, and the key to the whole goal is Carrasco, who's coming to support, and he's screaming for it. Now, the goalkeeper thinks it's impossible. The angle's impossible. It can't go in. Carrasco comes screaming. Goalkeeper anticipates, I'm going to knock it back, because nothing else. In his mind, there's nothing else can be done.
But the cutback.
But the cutback. And so Carrasco comes screaming. keeper comes out thinking, I'll pick this up, and left that hole, left the goal wide open.
As he's coming at the cross, because there's this tiny eye of a needle what between his left hand and the post.
You see it, because I've got a television camera right there, I know I'm going to smash into the television camera.
Okay.
I'm right on the line, it's impossible angle, he's coming screaming for it. I see a slight movement from him, catch him moving, and I just see a big space. And that's the key to it was Carrasco.
Does it come off your ear, the side of your head? Because you kind of got to lean and I don't know what you did with that. It still shouldn't have gone in.
No, it wasn't in the ear, but people say it was scored by the ear, and I've given up. So I say
again,
to people,
I tell point people out, that's not like you. That must have been years of people
years
saying it.
Years and years, people saying they go with the ear. I say, yeah, but it wasn't the ear. It was just this part of my head. He says, oh, was it? Right. And he said, yeah, but it was really the year, right? And so that's it. So I've given up. It was a year.
So it takes you through to, I really don't want to end this in a miserable way, but you played in the European Cup final. Mm-hmm. You know what struck me is that you told me something, because apart from a bright football man, you're a tough man, and you're very articulate too. You told me once about the pain you went through to play in that final. You had an injury. Was it a hamstring injury? A bad hamstring injury?
Bad hamstring,
which keeps you out of the Gothenburg semi-final. Which should have been the Aberdeen semi-final, because they put us out in there. Swedish bastards.
Yeah.
It's the truth as well. Horrible, horrible, horrible defeat. Otherwise it would have been the Dandies against Barcelona.
But it would have been a defeat again.
See, let's just... when did that... Did that was a goal with you? I'm not hearing you at all.
Yeah.
But
no, it was a shame.
You've got a bad injury, and somebody suggests there's this guru in Amsterdam. Or...
Nobody suggested.
Okay.
What somebody suggested, because there's a big pocket of blood in the back of my leg, what somebody suggested was the doctor, club doctor, that he says, it's impossible, you forget it. Big pocket of blood, limping. He said, what we're going to do is we're going to cut your hamstring and take that bit out and sew it back.
I said,
no, you're not. You're not cutting anything. No, because then you're finished. It's gone. It's over. So I remember Brian Robson always had been injured. You know Brian?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And he was playing next game. And
true.
Then with serious injuries, people think, how the fuck is he doing that? He must be a really tough guy. But of course he was a tough guy. But there was another secret to it, and that was the physio he was using. So I phoned Brian. I said, Brian, who's the physio, and how's that working? Is he good? And I said, I've got this problem. And he said, yeah. He said, he's absolutely fantastic. He's the best there is. He says, but I swear to you, he said, if you can't handle pain, forget it. He said, I'm not talking about just pain, really sore pain. Incredible pain that you'll end up crying, but you'll have to endure it. Because if you can't endure it, it won't work. He said, if you're willing to do all of that, then go and see him. So that's what I did. I phoned Richard Smith, a guy called Richard Smith, and Richard was happy to see me. I told the club, which you can imagine called a big stink, because nobody had ever done it before, saying, yeah, I'm going to use my own doctor, I'm not using him, because it's not...
The Spanish being Spanish, guys, it's a slight to our honour.
Yeah.
And...
yeah, but it's my leg. And no, it's true.
I'm not disputing it, but that's quite you.
Yeah.
My fucking leg.
My fucking leg. And nobody's going to cut my hamstring and sew it back together.
No,
again.
Obviously not. No.
So off I go to. So I phoned Richard and he says, "Yeah, come over." So I went to Amsterdam, and he looked at me and this guy, and he lay me on a bed, and this guy, he said, I can't remember the guy's name now. It's an old guy and he had funny eyes and weird. And I thought, fuck me, what have I done here? This guy said that. He said to the guy, he said, "Look at Steve and see what you think." So this old guy, you know, strong guy, but he had a cloth. Like a towel, a cloth. He said, right, and he started rubbing my whole body, my legs, with the cloth for some reason, my body, and he turned over and rubbed my back and my legs, everything, just rubbed, hard rubbing. And the guy said, after that, the guy said, yeah, I think he'll be okay. And he said, let me see your eyes. And I looked at him in the eyes. He said, yeah, no, eyes are good. And he said, he'll be okay. So Richard said, okay, thanks, whatever his name was, and he went off. And then he said, okay, jump up here and let's have a look at it. And then he started the massage, but it's a massage that you can't call it a massage, because what he did was he had to break the fibres again and make it all bleed and then get ice on it and flush it all through, and that's what he did. They break the fibres, so they're breaking your tissue, breaking it with their elbows, knuckles, standing on something, so got higher leverage on him, leaning on you. He had his assistant was a champion kickboxer, so he's built like solid muscle and bone. 8 hour sessions, 4 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon, and that's what they did. Doctor come over 3 or 4 days into it from here, just to, because club said, go and see what's happening there. So doctor stays there. He said, I'm not staying here, I'm not having anything to do with this. He said, I'm off.
He thought this is just gobbledygook rubbish I've never seen.
No, he said, because by then my leg was just raw, and the massaging every day and then the icing again, and he said, oh, no. And he left. He went. And I was left.
He couldn't stand being and watching it.
Yeah, he couldn't bear watching. He said, I can't watch it. He said, no. But so 3 or 4 days into it, then, you know, in the ice, and then again and again, a special diet as well, eating the right things, sleeping at the right times. And then a week into it, we start running. And it's a week, just a week. I've gone through a pocket of blood and a hamstring that somebody wants to cut because it was over. And a week into it, I'm running. And running again, and then I think 9 days, I'm sprinting flat out in 8 or 9 days. And then he's throwing little balls for me to volley into the net. He said, I want you to shoot this, shoot with all your power. I said, oh, no, I'm like that, shooting. He said, no, shoot properly. So I shoot properly and it pulls a little bit, and then he starts massaging again on the spot, throws another ball, bam, and then just grants it. And that's how it went. And that was it. It was just massage for probably 2 weeks. Yeah, no, 10 days, and then into training, running, sprinting, shooting. Well, always massaging, and he fixed it, and that got me. And Terry said to me, he said, if you can back and improve your fitness, you play. Mm. Simple as that. I said, that's all I ask. I'm not asking anything else. That's it. And I can back and improve my fitness.
Because Alonso, in your absence, has gotten through this dramatic game where they lose pretty embarrassing. It's only 2-0 in Sweden, but it's a big defeat.
Yeah.
And Alonso gets, I think, the 3 in the...
Peachy scored a hat-trick in the return. But if I'd have played in Gothenburg, we wouldn't have lost.
Yeah.
We'd have won the game.
Yeah.
And that's now, that's
Terry says, Steve, if you're fit, you're playing. There's no surprise in my part. I know why he's saying that. Mm. It's clear.
No, it comes back to the Peachy thing, and I'll address that at some stage properly in the book. People take the easy way out, saying Archibald should never have played. Archibald should have played. Archibald took you to that stage with his goals. Peachy came in and scored 3 goals when you'd lost 2-0. Mm-hmm. If Archibald would have been playing there, you wouldn't have lost 2-0. Mm-hmm. You'd probably won the game. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't have had to score the hat-trick in the return match. So, you know, people have got to think properly of how that whole process went, and that's how it went. I'm not bullshitting, and I don't blow my own horn. I'm just stating facts. If I'd have been in that Gothenburg game away, we wouldn't have lost the game because I was flying at the time. And the team was working well, and it's just how it was. Gothenburg going to beat us in that night. That wouldn't have happened. And so, you know, I come back and I prove my fitness, and Terry said, okay, you're in. And Peachy was out. Peachy had played one game, right? So, okay, it was a great game. He scored the 3 goals, which was fantastic on the night. But still, you know, I'd brought us through Juventus, through a Porto, through other games. My goals had helped us win the league to get us into the European Cup, etc., etc. So, you know, I just want to address that a little bit more.
No, it's really important, and I remembering the style of play and the level of form and the huge disappointment. When people speak to me who were in Seville for that final against Bucharest, the disappointment that socios, culés, Barca fans speak about, the fact that you were, you know, taken off, that the coach lost a bit of faith in you too soon in the final, the fact that they maybe didn't see exactly the form that brought you that far.
No, because the reason was because Steaua Bucharest came to defend, nothing else.
It was horrible.
They didn't cross the line. They didn't cross the halfway line. It was unbelievable. But in history, when you look back, they won it and we didn't. They don't care how they win it. And it's happened with other teams who have kind of done the same thing and got a goal somehow or got penalties.
Red Star, I just want to say. People forget, when people criticise the Champions League right now, people forget the absolute, utter fucking dross that we had to watch when teams just went, we've got nothing to do except for get a fluky goal or wait for penalties, and you watched utter rubbish.
In the European Cup?
Yeah.
But it was
those two finals.
Was champions of the league. Not this bullshit, this league, Champions League.
I
it was the champions
that.
Of each league.
But the quality.
And it was it's 2 games. You win there and you win at home and you're through. Now you can lose a game here, lose a game there, and you can still get through. It's bullshit.
But we get better quality football. We get better attacking attitudes, we get more open football, more creative football, And the swap, to go back to what we saw in Seville that night, where one team turned up and just weren't interested in playing. That's not football.
But would I change it now and have us going out and defending like that and having the medal? Yeah.
Fine.
Because all in all, you want the medal.
You've done it, not me. I accept that.
Think of them where they came from. It was crap, the way they played. I didn't like it. I wouldn't have played that way, to be fair. I wouldn't have, you know, I would have hated to play that way.
Yeah.
But, you know, Terry took Bernd off and then he took me off. And I said to him, you shouldn't have taken me off because I was just coming into it now. My injury was, I was more fluid in the last 20, 30 minutes of the game, and I felt it because the ball came flashing across the goal and I got it. And nobody else would have got it. It was just one of these things that came. It's an instinct thing. I got it. I didn't direct it towards the goal, but it didn't hit target. But then I thought, oh, that's it. I'm in. So just at that moment, he decided to take me off. And he's asked me since then, he said, and he asked me recently, and I said, well, you had a bit of mistakes and stuff, and I don't know what he wanted me to say, but I said, no, you made a mistake. You should have kept Bernd and myself on, because we'd taken you to the whole thing.
I'm a little bit, both of you would have scored the penalties as well, which nobody else in the team seemed capable of even hitting the
target. Bernd was a penalty taker, yeah. He was the main penalty taker. Baruti, our goalkeeper, scored a penalty, saved penalties. It was an incredible finish to it. But, and through all that, Richard Smith, who had got me to where I am, had come with us on the trip, and he was treating everybody for all the knocks before the night. Two, 3 days, they were at a hotel from there to the game time. And the players were thinking, oh, that's brilliant. You know, easing up angles with this. It was incredible.
It's very distressing that it wasn't a win, but it was a European final nonetheless.
When Man United played here, I said to Fergie the night before the game, I said, well, I'd give you my experience in this, and you should use it as a motivational or any way you want to use it, but use it. In my cup final, we lost it. And after the game, you walk past that cup. You can't even bear to look at it, and you certainly can't touch it. You can only walk past it, and you'll never get another chance. He said, fuck no. He said, oh no, I can't use that. It's too much fucking stress. So after the game, I'm at the game, and they obviously win in the circumstances they won. And he comes up the stairs, and I'm just waiting at the top of the tunnel to congratulate him and stuff. He said, I fucking used it at half time.
Don't have to stand and look at that trophy not having won it and walk past it and let them.
Can't touch it. You can look at it, but you can't touch it. And that's, well, a hell of a thing for a player to think about.
That's what I was going to say. What's Sean out of this? I knew what you're like when you're dissecting football. Your football brain is terrific, but allied to the fact that you've done it and your football articulacy is a joy. Again, I'll say it, as I said in this interview before. There are the majority in football don't do this, can't do this. Mm. And it's attractive to be near football intelligence. It's why I live here. Mm. I don't live here for the... I can't speak for you. It's not just nice cuisine or there's a beach or...
No, it's a different football philosophy.
I've been near thinkers and analysers and performers of football who have utterly made my life better, not my profession.
Yeah.
It's a joy. And that's why I wanted to come here today. And that's why I'm also pleased that you're gonna put this down in a book, finally. This and a million other anecdotes. Well, you're going to bring your... Because you've got watching on Twitter, you've got an enormous fan base at all the clubs that you played at. People who want to do what we're doing now and understand your life, hear about your career. Will you enjoy producing that?
Yeah, I'm beginning to enjoy it now. I've done the first 7,000 or 8,000 words. And we're preparing it to send to publisher, and I'm enjoying it, and I think I'll enjoy it more for my family because my kids, you know, and that's why I'm doing it, because somebody said to me one day, and that's when the button was pressed, and because I was never ever going to do it, he said it'd be a legacy for your kids. They don't know what's happened to
that's
you, really.
A good point.
They've heard stuff.
Yeah,
it's a chance for you to put it down and let them see it, and let them, you know, understand how all these things went, how they happened, what you came through, because you can get to the top, but you've got to come through a lot of shit to get to the top. Mm. There's a ton of things I had to do, you know, I was a mechanic till I was 20, and then I came into professional football at 21, but I worked my balls off till I was 20. I was, you know, out in the morning, I was to my work, finished work, training with Clyde, then after training, doing homeworks till 2 in the morning, then back to work. It was just continuous, which gave me some sort of character and strength, I suppose, because mechanic lifting everything else and lifting stuff and everything else that I was doing and just the movement and then the training. Then you're looking at the guys in front of you in training. It's a guy called Don Sullivan, who you'll know very well.
Clyde Celtic.
Clyde.
Nice, elegant midfielder.
Clyde, Aberdeen, Celtic. And he was an elegant midfield player, but Dom was the man that was fastest in everything. And I thought, I'm going to catch you one day. And that was my aim at Clyde, to get to Dom. And I eventually got him.
Yeah.
And I got past him. and you know, so all these things, and I don't know what drove me really. All these things to come through, all these little things that maybe my kids might look at and take something out of at some stage, but at least they'll know the proper story.
It's a good choice you've made. I'm glad whoever said that to you did say that to you. This has been a tiny tip of the iceberg. Boy, it's been a pleasure.
Thank
you've lived all this, but Neil and I are like inside my head right now, it's like inside a champagne bottle. That's what it's like, man. That's what you do. Yeah. Steve Archibald.
Good.
Legendary dandy. Regional club, my bollocks.
Yeah.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. A pleasure. It's been a pleasure.
The Big Interview is produced by Backpage and me, Graham Hunter. The music you always hear, the music that you love, is Beer Jacket, who's always been there for us. You can keep up with everything that we do by getting on the mailing list at grahamhunter.tv. How many times do I have to tell you? Yes, several thousand of you have done it, but come on, slackers at the back, sign up. That grahamhunter.tv site is also where you can buy the new updated version of my book, Barca, The Making of the Greatest Team in the World. It's my account of the Guardiola era at the Camp Nou from 2008 until 2012, plus Tito, Tata, and Adios Johan Cruyff. It is in all good bookshops now, but it does also make a big difference to all of us who've worked on the project if you choose to buy direct, particularly for Christmas, at grahamhunter.tv/books. You'll be sure to get the new edition, and you will be helping us to continue producing independent content. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being there. Without you, this would be fun, but a lot less fun. See you soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.